Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. Coronavirus. City. MMH physician tests positive for virus. Doctor in critical care unit is 67th confirmed case in Midland County. By Stuart Doran. The 67th confirmed case of coronavirus is a local doctor. The City of Midland reported Wednesday evening that a critical care unit physician at Midland Memorial Hospital tested positive for COVID-19. The physician is a male in his 30s, and the source of exposure is contact to a known case. The city reported that Midland Health immediately tested the physician when notified of a fever and required him to self-isolate until further notice. The other physicians and staff workers along this physician's maintained proper PPE while at work, the city reported. While rounding on patients, the physician was wearing an N95 mask as well. The city also reported that out of an abundance of caution, Midland Health has tested 9 physicians for potential exposure and is monitoring 41 employees. At this time, none of these individuals have developed symptoms, the city reported. They will each be conducting self-monitoring twice a day. The physician's non-COVID patient contacts also are being traced at this time, according to the city. They will be monitored and tested if they develop symptoms. The physician is the second confirmed case reported Wednesday. 30th confirmed case connected to Midland Medical Lodge. A woman in her 70s became the 30th person connected with the Midland Medical Lodge to test positive for coronavirus. The City of Midland reported Wednesday that another patient from the lodge is the 66th confirmed case and the source of exposure was contact to a known case. Of the 67 confirmed cases, 25 have recovered, according to the health department, and another 2 have completed isolation. 4 have died. Midland Health reported on its website Wednesday that there have been 1,394 samples tested and 74 have tested positive. Those positives include some who are non-residents of Midland County. There are 230 waiting for results. Those numbers do not include people tested at private physician offices. Education. MISD job search begins for new Lee principal. By Stuart Doran. Midland ISD is looking for a new principal at Lee High School. The district has posted a job search on its website, http://midlandisd.net, for a new principal at the second of MISD's larger high schools. There is no information about the current principal, Stan Van Hooser, who has been the leader at Lee since 2015 and has been in education about 27 years. Van Hooser came back home to Midland after stops in the Metroplex at Louisville ISD and Dallas ISD. Van Hooser's departure is the third departure of a Lee principal since 2013. That year, Stephanie Howard left Midland ISD to serve as Executive Director for Curriculum and Instruction in Ector County ISD. In 2016, Jeanette McNeely left her alma mater to take a position at a school district near the Metroplex. Van Hooser will transition into a new role this summer as the district's Executive Director of State and Federal Programs. Stan has been a tremendous leader at Lee. I look forward to witnessing his impact at the district level as he moves into his new role, Superintendent Orlando Riddick said in a press release. The job notice states the next principal will direct and manage the instructional program and supervise operations at the campus level, provide instructional leadership to ensure high standards of instructional service, direct the implementation of district policies and instructional programs, and manage the operation of all campus activities. Major responsibilities include instructional management, school organization morale, school organization improvement, personal management, management of administrative, fiscal, and facilities functions, student management, school or community relations and professional growth and development, and lastly, academic excellence indicators and campus performance objectives. Just months into Riddick's tenure, Van Hooser made one of his more high-profile decisions, that Lee High School band will not incorporate Dixie into its school fight song. The decision came after concerns about the best interest of the students, particularly the safety of the students when traveling. Van Hooser did allow the Dixie Dolls to remain the name of the Lee High School drill team. In the last ratings from the Texas Education Agency, Lee High School received a C and an overall scale score of 76, which made it one of the high-achieving campuses in the district. The native Midlander and Lee graduate was named Region 18 Principal of the Year in 2019. Securing funding from state and federal programs impacts so many of our students, and I'm thrilled to get the opportunity to better the lives of more than 26,000 students, Van Hooser said in the release. I am proud to have been the principal at my alma mater, and I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to work with such great people and students. The salary range for the next principal will be $100,241 to $117,929, according to the job advertisement. The salary range for the district's Executive Director of State and Federal Programs is between $100,241 and $135,619.76, according to Midland ISD's Administrative Professional pay plan. For the class of 2020, graduating seniors have the opportunity to take pictures in front of a balloon sculpture 10 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Saturday in the front yard of 810 West Kansas Avenue, home of Cody Williams. The owner of Cody's Red Balloon said he is displaying the sculptures to celebrate the seniors who will not have traditional graduation ceremonies because of coronavirus. He also will be making flyers for graduating seniors that can be displayed in front yards. Flyer orders will open this weekend. For more information, go to codysredballoon.com. Education. MISD won't require summer school, by Stuart Doran. Midland ISD reported Tuesday it will not require mandatory summer school for its students, including those in danger of falling behind. MISD Chief of Staff Katie Adkins said Tuesday that there will be summer learning opportunities, including those for students in danger of falling behind. Based upon what we see from the fall semester and continuing on to the spring semester. She also said there should be opportunities for students who might want enrichment before the 2020-21 school year. At this time, we are not altering our start dates or end dates of our school year, Adkins said during the United Command Team press conference. There's been some suggestions that all students be brought in for mandatory summer school, but we realize that is not going to be possible for all students. Adkins said the district cannot make students take part in summer learning, but that the district can reach out to families, explain the situation facing a student, and provide what the district can offer for that student. This would be something for students who elect to take part, Adkins said. Midland ISD students and teachers will not return to school campuses for the rest of the school year, which ends on May 22nd. That means students will not be in front of a teacher for the last 3 months of the school year. The district, after it extended spring break, provided enrichment materials for students and is currently involved in a Google Classroom process for those students with the technology to take part. Grades are not part of the current learning taking place. Last week, the district announced it would install a non-numerical system to measure academic progress, and that for a student to receive credit for spring 2020 courses, they must show at least 70% mastery of objectives assigned. For promotion to the next grade level, students must show mastery in their courses, the district stated last week in a press release. Teachers will use the new progress monitoring system for two evaluation periods. The first 9 weeks of the spring semester, January 7th through March 6th, and the first at-home instruction period. Students are expected to spend up to 3 hours per day on assignments and formative assessments, according to the release. Learning is not dependent on the time of day. Students can access Google Classroom and supporting sites at times of their choosing. Parents are encouraged to work with students to create a schedule. Coronavirus. Odessa woman with COVID-19 urges residents to stay home. By Caitlin Randall. 20 days ago, Denise Riveras Garza thought she had a persistent sinus headache. She went to her doctor's office for allergy shots and carried on working at a credit union in Odessa. After her headache gave way to a fever, cold sweats, and difficulty breathing, the 38-year-old was asked to be tested for the novel coronavirus. She found out Easter Sunday that she'd tested positive, and her conditions worsened at home over the next few days, until a nurse friend pleaded with her to go to the hospital. Rivas Garcia was admitted to Odessa Regional Medical Center 14 days after her symptoms began, a time span in which most who have the virus are thought to be recovered and no longer contagious. She spent 5 days isolated in the hospital's COVID-19 unit, unable to see her husband and 17-year-old daughter. She recalled in a phone interview Wednesday that while a tube was inserted into her bronchioles in case she needed to be connected to a ventilator, she read about two patients who died at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. Until she was diagnosed, Rivas Garcia said she never thought it would happen to her. "I always thought, oh, it's happening to other people. It's happening to people far away. It might happen to my mom and dad," she said. "I asked them to be careful. Never, ever did it cross my mind that it would happen to me." She said she saw the numbers of those infected read out during news broadcast and flashed across newspaper headlines, but didn't register the seriousness of the virus. "The numbers that we saw that were coming up on our Facebook and so forth, they were just numbers," she said. "They weren't faces." That's why she began uploading videos of her experience to YouTube to put a face on what has been referred to as an invisible enemy. One video, titled "How I Survived COVID-19, has been viewed more than 5,000 times. Rivas Garcia says she's made a point to upload her video in Spanish as well to make the information accessible to Spanish speakers. Over the 2 weeks before she was admitted to the hospital, Rivas Garcia said she felt at times like she was beating the virus, but those sporadic bursts of energy subsided at night. The night would come, and it was like a sleeping dragon would come in and just attack me, she said. Since being released from the hospital on Saturday, Rivas Garza says she's improved dramatically and is about 99% back to her usual self, though at times she still struggles with shortness of breath. Now 7 days post-fever, she said Wednesday night would be the first night she would return to sleeping next to her husband, who's been bunkering on the couch. "I'm excited to be able to touch him, feel his hand, feel his hug. Same thing with my daughter," she said. "I'm excited to be able to get this past us." Rivas Garza has no idea how she contracted the virus and how she tries not to make herself crazy analyzing the thousands of possible scenarios. Was it my husband? Did he bring it home? Was it me being at HEB? I picked up a lettuce and it was on the lettuce? It could have been me driving to work, she said. I don't know. We were being cautious. We really were. And that's what she wants to emphasize to residents who dismiss the coronavirus as a hoax, or those anxious to reopen businesses and abandon social distancing. It's happening here. It's not just on the TV screen, like a movie that we're watching, she said. It's alive. The virus is here, and it's hurting and killing people. If you don't need to be out, then you stay home. Don't be selfish. MMH. All Medical Lodge residents are quarantining. By Caitlin Randall. All Midland Medical Lodge residents are quarantining in their rooms and public spaces are closed after 21 residents and 9 employees tested positive for the novel coronavirus. Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers said Wednesday. The outbreak at the nursing home has caused the number of confirmed cases in Midland County to double in the last week, up to 66 as of Wednesday afternoon. 7 patients from the Midland Medical Lodge currently are receiving treatment in the hospital, while the remainder of the residents are isolated in a ward at the facility and the positive employees are isolating at home. All residents and staff at the facility were tested for the virus, and most of the test results have come back negative, Myers said. He said there are no plans to retest individuals who tested negative, though some who are symptomatic have been retested. He said hospital staff has been in frequent contact with the nursing home as they tried to guide them through the outbreak. Our team has been in touch with them regularly, and we've even had our facilities folks go over there and assess the airflow in the facility and try to assist them in placing patients in the safest possible environments, he said. Myers said it's unknown at this time if Midland has passed its peak of infection, even as state and national leaders discuss plans to reopen non-essential businesses. While it appears as though we haven't had material growth in the overall community, the possibility remains for a large-scale outbreak at any point, as long as the virus is present in the community, he said. I don't think we can let our guard down. He also addressed a small cohort of Easy Rider bus drivers that have tested positive. Myers said 26 other drivers have been tested and the hospital is awaiting those results. He emphasized that all workers should stay home if they experience symptoms of the virus or come in contact with someone known to have the virus. He said employees should continue to self-monitor, practice proper hand hygiene, and wear masks. City. Confirmed cases inside county rises to 66, by Stuart Doran. A woman in her 70s became the 30th person connected with the Midland Medical Lodge to test positive for coronavirus. The City of Midland reported Wednesday that another patient from the lodge is a confirmed case and the source of exposure was contact to a known case. Wednesday's confirmed case brings the total inside Midland County to 66. Of those confirmed cases, 25 have recovered, according to the health department, and another 2 have completed isolation. 4 have died. Midland Health, on its website Wednesday, reported there have been 1,394 samples tested and 74 have tested positive. Those positives include some who are non-residents of Midland County. There are 230 waiting for results. Those numbers do not include those tested at private physicians' offices. Obituaries. Becky Schroyer. 2 Timothy 4:7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Becky, a devout Christian and faithful servant of Christ, our Savior, finished her good fight and course on Sunday afternoon, April 19th. Born Eunice Rebecca Lomax, Becky, on December 2, 1947, to Joe and Mildred Lomax of Van Horn, Texas, the youngest of 3. She attended and graduated from Van Horn High School, where she was a baton twirler and flute player for the Van Horn Eagles, and was also voted Miss Sun Princess of Van Horn during that time. She attended universities at Sol-Ross State, Angelo State, and Texas Tech, earning a major degree in early education and a minor degree in music. While at Texas Tech, she met her future husband, Larry Dwight Schroyer, of Sonora, Texas. Upon graduation, Becky taught music in Sweetwater, Texas for 1 year. Then she and Larry married on June 1, 1973, and she moved to Midland, where Larry was employed with Los Patios Nursery. She was a teacher for Midland ISD for over 20 years and also taught at the Child Development Center at First Baptist Church for many years, where she made many close and dear friends. Becky and Larry were blessed with 2 daughters, Stacy Lynn in 1977 and Lisa Gale in 1979. They were also blessed with 2 grandchildren. Becky is survived by her husband of 47 years, Larry D. Schroyer, daughter Stacy McWilliams, and husband Kevin McWilliams, daughter Lisa Schroyer, 2 grandchildren, sister Jamil Chapel of Seminole, brother Charlie Lomax and wife Ruetta Lomax of Van Horn, and numerous nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be held at Cedar Hill Cemetery near the family's ranch. A celebration of life will be held at a future date. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be donated to First Baptist Church of Midland, St. Jude Hospital, or West Texas Rehabilitation Center. Ethel Mae Johnson Bradley. Ethel Mae Johnson Bradley, 88, of Midland, passed away peacefully at her residence on Sunday, April 12, 2020. She was born to John Edgar Johnson, Sr., and Johnny Mae Newton on February 9, 1932, in Falls County, Texas. Ethel married John Clarence, J.C., Bradley Sr. on April 16, 1949. Some years later, the couple moved to Midland, Texas, where they started their family. From this loving union, six children were born. Ethel was a member at Antioch Baptist Church in Midland, Texas, where she attended for many years. Ethel was preceded in death by her parents, John and Johnny Johnson, husband John Clarence, J.C. Bradley Sr., one daughter, Carolyn Ann Bradley, and one son, Don Eugene Bradley. Left to cherish her memory are her sons, John Clarence Bradley Jr., Hollis Glenn Bradley, and Joe Wayne Bradley, all of Midland. Two daughters, Audrey Virginia Bradley and Maydene Howard of Midland. 11 grandchildren and 27 great-grandchildren. Ethel also leaves a host of other family members and friends to cherish her memory. Graveside services are under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkin.com. Hildegard W. Kroger. Hildegard, Hildy, Margaret Whelan Kroger, beloved wife of Dr. J. Stephen Kroger for 58 years, and devoted mother to John C. Kroger and Stephanie A. Kroger Klassen, passed away on April 17, 2020, at Legacy Ranch Memorial Care in Midland, Texas, from complications due to Alzheimer's disease and cancer. Hildy was born to John Justin and Margaret Zoeller Whelan on November 24, 1939, in Cincinnati, Ohio. After graduating at the top of her class from St. Elizabeth School of Nursing in Covington, Kentucky, she became a registered nurse working first at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Covington, then for the Public Health Department of the City of Cincinnati and Presbyterian Medical Center in Denver, Colorado. At age 10, Hildy met Steve Kroger, the cousin of neighborhood friend. Thus began a romance between Hildy and Steve that blossomed, grew, strengthened, and endured for 70 years. Hildy and Steve were married in Cincinnati on December 26, 1962, and several years later moved to Colorado, where they would live and raise their children, first in Denver, then in Longmont and Estes Park, until moving to Midland, Texas in 2012. Hildy is survived by her husband Steve Kroger in Midland, Texas, son and daughter-in-law John and Loris Kroger in Atlanta, Georgia, daughter and son-in-law Stephanie and John Klassen, and great-granddaughters Catherine and Mary Klassen in Midland, Texas, sister Justine, Dusty, Nabee in Rogers City, Missouri, and numerous nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, John Justin and Margaret Zoeller Whelan, and her sister, Barbara Antoinette Tony Meyer. A memorial in celebration of Hildy's life will be held at a later date due to the COVID-19 restrictions. Hildy cared deeply for the Franciscan order of her lifelong friend, Dr. Dick Lambert, and donations in her memory may be sent to the Franciscans of St. John's, the Baptist Province at 1615 Vine Street, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45202. Donations may also be made in her memory to the Longmont Humane Society at www.longmonthumane.org. Rowetta Sadler Eaton. On January 13, 1916, Rowetta Sadler arrived on this earth, unmistakably a gift from God to Annie Lemons and Roe Sadler. On April 18, 2020, Miss Rowetta Sadler Eaton finished the course. For 104 years, she fought a good fight, and now she is safely in the arms of the Lord. Rowetta Eaton leaves to mom 5 children, Clara Moore, Lloyd Bedford, Susie, Leon Bedford, Rosie, Leon Jones, and Vernice Bedford, 2 sisters, Mary Alice Dyers and Beverly Johnson, and a host of grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and many friends. She is preceded in death by her husband, Jody Eaton, her child, Roe Ethel Ratliff, and her brother, Willie Sadler, and her sister, Ever D. Graves. A private graveside service will be held on Friday, April 24, 2020, at 1 p.m. at Fairview Cemetery. Funeral services are under the direction of Jackie Warren Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. Front page. Customizing the covers. Tattoo Company Making Masks by Royal McGregor. RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. Edgar Armendariz sees public mask wearing being part of the culture for the foreseeable future. The owner of Black Cat Tattoo Company explained that if people have to wear face masks, they might as well enjoy what they look like. Armendariz is utilizing his SureColor F2100 direct-to-garment printer, which is normally used to print designs on t-shirts and sweatshirts, to customize face masks for the public. If you get something that looks cool, you are going to wear it, Armendariz said. It looks like we are going to be wearing them for a while. We better get suited for something that you are going to want to wear. The customized face masks that Armendariz prints cost $15. He also said people can submit the design of what they want on the face mask through the company's website. Armendariz said the biggest snag that he's having is purchasing blank face masks. He said he ordered 20 from a Dallas mask maker, but he would like to find a local source in Odessa. I know a lot of people were eye gouging for face masks, Armendariz said, It's a good thing that we are keeping it small while mom and pop people are at home sewing masks. It takes a little bit longer, the price is higher, and there's not much profit margin, but it's better than nothing. You are helping people. In addition to face masks, Black Cat Tattoo Company is continuing to print its company's shirts, many of which feature branding from National Cleaning products. Armendariz said with each online purchase, the customer will also receive 1 ounce bottle of hand sanitizer. The 31-year-old from Los Angeles also hopes that his face mask operation can help employ people in the community, and eventually he will be able to donate face masks to people who work in the food service industry. We are just trying to pick up with what we could, Armendariz said. The bills don't stop coming. When this is over, the guys still need a place to come and work at, so I have to figure out a way to keep the lights on. When Governor Greg Abbott started issuing executive orders, Armendariz said he could see the writing on the wall as businesses were forced to shut down to limit the spread of coronavirus. Armendariz said he watched restaurants and bars move to takeout only. About a week and a half later, Armendariz was forced to close the doors to his business when Abbott issued an executive order on March 31st that people should avoid tattoo or piercing studios. Armendariz said once he's given the green light to open his tattoo studio again, he said there will be additional guidelines at his business. One of those guidelines will be constant use of face masks. Local business owners in the food and entertainment industry that have spoken to the Odessa American believe the coronavirus is going to change how people view daily life. Armendariz agrees with that statement. There's definitely going to be a lot of restructuring coming in the future, he said. We've already talked about taking people's temperatures and then limit the number of people where it's going to be one-on-one. We are going to have to schedule everybody. It feels like it's going to turn into a museum with an entrance and an exit. We kind of have the layout where we could do that. It feels like we are going structure toward that way. Drive-Thru Coming by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. During Wednesday's virtual hospital briefing, officials said that a county drive-thru testing facility is on the way and it will be located at the Ector County Coliseum. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said that the EOC is going to conduct some dry runs this week, and if everything works out, they could open up the facility as soon as Monday. He said that the process would entail for patients to call a representative who will pass the patient information to Dr. Timothy Benton, who will decide who is a candidate for a test or not. Shelton said that after the screening, patients drive to the Ector County Coliseum and go through multiple checkpoints, get a swab, and then patients will receive a text with their results. He added that patients will not have to leave their vehicles while getting swabbed. Ector County has 62 positives, 937 negatives, 179 pending, and 1,178 total people have been tested. 28 have recovered, and there have been 4 deaths of Ector County residents. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said that MCH has tested 587 patients, 37 positives, and 5 of those are in the hospital. Tippin said that MCH has received 480 negatives with 70 pending. He added that there are 13 patients under investigation in the hospital. Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that 139 of the Madison Medical Resort employees had tested negative. She said that currently there are none pending and that Madison still had to get in touch with certain employees to be tested. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that, including the Madison Medical Residents, ORMC has tested 249 people with 13 positives, 233 negatives, and 3 are pending. We've used 5 of our rapid tests so far, so we have 17 of those test kits remaining. We are reaching out to the state to get more of those test kits so that we can continue to do those, Brown said. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Rohit Saarinen said that ORMC's transition back to doing elective surgeries is going reasonably well. He said that they are trying to follow algorithms to keep patients safe and to prioritize those who need surgeries done right away. He said that they did around 10 surgeries on Wednesday and that the range throughout the week won't differ far from that. That's low compared to our normal volume, he said, but it's ramping up cautiously but in real time. He added that since ORMC started doing elective surgeries, there will be some employees coming back to work. It's not a open your tap and let everybody come back. That's not the point, he added. It's slowly bring people back as you need, as volume builds, and as safety allows. While government officials nationally and locally are pushing to open the economy, Saarinen spoke for medical personnel, saying that nobody knows how to predict the data for sure, but that for the first time during Tuesday's briefing, data showed a decrease in new COVID-19 cases each day. Even medical professionals fully understand what the economic impact is of such a large shutdown. So we want everything to come back to as normal as possible, but we want to do it in the safest way possible. MCH Chief of Staff and Interim Medical Officer Dr. Donald Davenport said that even when the economy is open, there will still be social distancing and people are still going to be wearing masks. We have to prepare for what could happen as well. If we start to see a surge, how are we going to react to that? And we have to be aware that that could potentially happen when you start having more people congregate in public. He added that the community and hospitals need to look at their contingency plans and be willing to slow down reopening if a spike in cases did occur. I know nobody wants to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation, he said. If we start to decrease in number of cases, and then all of a sudden we start to peak again, then we got to reevaluate that situation. Saarinen said for cases regarding COVID-19 treatment, new drugs, or testing, he would refer providers and people interested to tinyurl.com/Y7CLU26F. Dr. Donald Davenport, MCH Chief of Staff and Interim Medical Officer. Council approves money to replace sewer line by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. During Tuesday's nearly 4-hour City Council work session, the Council did several things, including interviewing applicants for the open District 1 Council seat and approving money to replace a failed sewer line. The council awarded $220,475 to TEC Excavation, and the Odessa Public Works Director, Thomas Kerr, requested $55,000 in case there are more problems during construction. The asbestos cement sewer line constructed during the 70s, Kerr said, has corroded past a point of repair and extends from east of West County Road to Whitaker and is south of 19th Street and north of Casa Grande. He added that there is about 25 miles of asbestos cement sewer line left in the city. Kerr mentioned that TEC said they could start work on Monday and that it would take 60 days to complete. It's something that really has gone on longer than it should, and it's something we need to take care of, Kerr said. Kerr showed a picture of one of the pipe barrels that has corroded until dirt and rocks were visible. They do have to worry about live flow while they're working, he said. City Manager Michael Marrero said that this bid was not formally sent out given the critical need to get it done. We do have an ability to work projects on an emergency basis, and that's essentially what we're doing today, Marrero said. All of the council members approved the sewer line replacement except District 2 Council Member Dewey Bryant, who had to leave the work session early, and District 1, which is an empty seat. Council members spent several hours Tuesday interviewing candidates in a virtual executive session to replace former Councilman Malcolm Hamilton. The District 1 seat will remain empty until the appointment of a replacement during the Tuesday City Council meeting. The appointment comes after former District 1 Councilman Malcolm Hamilton abruptly resigned several weeks ago. Hamilton's seat expires in 6 months, and whoever is temporarily appointed to District 1 will need to be re-elected when the term ends in November. The following are applicants. Dustin Fawcett is the Vice President of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN. His application indicates he has lived in the district for 8 months. The Reverend Michael K. Shelton Sr. is the minister of the Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church in Odessa, and he has lived in the district about 3 years, his application detailed. Terrence Collins Williams did not list a current job on his application, but was a former warehouse associate at AW Energy. He has lived in the district for 20-plus years. Jesse M. Porras listed various community organizations, but no current job was listed. He listed that he has lived in District 1 for 60 years. Eddie Mitchell listed he has lived in District for 21 years and that he owns Ed Tom's Barbecue. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 62. Ector County negative, 937 out of 1,178 tested, with 179 pending. 4 deaths. Midland County, 66 confirmed out of 1,394 tested. 4 deaths. Texas, 21,069 confirmed, with 216,783 tested. Total Texas deaths, 543. U.S. cases, 802,583 total confirmed and 44,575 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Visit Big Bend. Big Bend Ranch State Park will open its gates to the public today to day visitation only. In addition, only the front country areas at Big Bend Ranch State Park along FM 170 will be opening. The East and West Contrabando trailheads will be open, as will river put-ins. However, the interior of the park will remain closed. Specific regulations that have been put in place by Texas Parks and Wildlife for the public to visit include requiring visitors to wear face coverings, maintain a 6-foot distance from individuals outside of their party, prohibiting groups larger than 5. Big Bend National Park remains closed to the public, including a ban on through traffic through the park. In addition, Brewster County has implemented a stay-at-home order until April 30th. Officials have also ordered all lodging, including hotels, motels, short-term rentals, RV parks, and campgrounds, closed until April 30th. Bars are closed until further notice, and restaurants are allowed delivery and to-go options only, all of which are subject to extensions. Waived testing. Governor Greg Abbott has waived certain testing requirements for Advanced Practice Registered Nurses, APRN, as part of the state's response to COVID-19. As a result of this waiver, new APRN graduates who have applied for APRN licensure with the Board of Nursing and have met all licensure requirements except national certification may begin practicing under direct physician supervision. This graduate approval does not include prescriptive authority. From staff reports. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020, page 2 read. WNPAC Honoring High School College Seniors by Ruth Campbell. RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. As a way of honoring high school and college graduates, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center has started Senior Spotlight on its Facebook page twice a week. The call was put out on the Wagner Noel social media. We said, submit a short video of you listing your accomplishments or highlights. It could be you singing or performing a senior recital piece. It could be sharing a favorite memory, and you can do that either as a video or by sharing pictures and a paragraph. So however they're comfortable, so they can have a positive reflection back on their high school or college time, General Manager Stephanie Rivas said. Rivas said the idea came up during a marketing meeting when the talk turned to end-of-year moments the seniors will miss, like spring concerts and graduation. Rivas added that she felt like they should do something on their social media to give seniors a little bit of a virtual high five so that they know that as a community, we're still thinking about them and that we give them some encouragement as we go kind of in their school year. A call was put out on the WNPAC's social media at the end of March or early April. The post got great engagement on our social media, and we are now doing those every Wednesday and Friday on our Facebook page, and usually right around 1:30, like 1 in the afternoon, you start to see those, Rivas said. We're going to continue to do that throughout the summer, so we're encouraging parents to let their seniors know to submit one to us. We would love to highlight as many of them as we can, she added. It doesn't matter where the student went to high school or is going to college. This is a hard time for them, and we understand that, and we know that they are missing their friends, and they're missing their school, and they're missing those activities. So this was just one little way that we, as the Wagner Noel, felt like we could give back to our community. We could help support those students, those graduates, and let them know that their accomplishments are not being ignored, because in all of this, I know that the high schools in general in our area are trying to make plans and do some things for a later date, which I think is great. I think they should hopefully still have those moments, but this is one little way we thought that we could help highlight them if they allow us to, Rivas said. Submissions can be sent via email to marketing@wagnernoel.com. We're just asking that they share their name and their school, and they give us a little paragraph or a video sharing their favorite memories of college or high school, she said. UTPB Communications Manager Alexa Dunson said the university is proud to have the Performing Arts Center as part of its organization. The WNPAC provides endless amounts of entertainment to our community, but like many other organizations, has had to put things on pause. We know that postponing commencement ceremonies is heartbreaking for many students, but we're happy that the Wagner is doing what they can to still shine a light on all the hard work of West Texas seniors. We hope that graduating Falcons will submit their photos to this fun project, Dunson said in a text message.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.